Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Yet another survey on what Americans think about unions. And in a nutshell, it's pretty good. OSHA's new guidance on the vaccine. And today on the show, the Columbus Central Ohio building trades and the number two person in the AFL-CIO. Welcome to the Friday, November 5th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on six platforms now. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. Many ways you can access this show 24/7. Anytime you want to listen to this show, there it is. Dorsey Hager is going to be our first guest on the show. He's one of our regulars, longtime contributor, and a longtime sponsor. We do appreciate that. ColumbusConstruction.org is their website. Dorsey is the executive director of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Three things we're going to get into. One of them, the election results from Tuesday, how they fared. In fact, we have a comment from Liz Schuler of the AFL-CIO. I'll get to that in a minute. The Hilliard City Schools Outreach Event. Dorsey's always going to the schools to make sure that young people know about the trades and what kind of careers they may want to get involved with. He always says it's a pathway to the middle class, and that is so true. And we're going to talk about building. Apparently, there was a groundbreaking there for what they call AM Gen. Now, he'll explain what that's all about. And every time we have Dorsey on the show, something new is popping up in Columbus. A lot of growth there. They count their population a little bit differently than some cities. It's like the whole county area. And they now rival, I believe, San Francisco in population, something like 900,000 people in the Columbus area. Fred Redman will be joining us later in the show. And this is something I talked to Fred about. Maybe it was about 2 months ago when he was designated as Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. Now, Fred is a longtime steelworker, started with the steelworkers back in 1973, and he's in the process right now of transitioning from the steelworkers to the AFL-CIO. And what we're going to do starting, actually we started this last month, it's the first Friday with Fred. This is the first Friday of the new month. And I talked to Fred about it. He said, sure, I'll join you. So this way we can cover just about every union that's part of the AFL-CIO. And there are, I believe, 57 right now. Fred's been really, really active. He was out on the West Coast a couple of days ago rallying healthcare workers in Southern California. They work for Kaiser Permanente. They're not being treated fairly. We'll touch on that. He was in Chicago last week meeting with union members and leaders. And he toured Wolf Point South, groundbreaking for a new construction project in the heart of the city that's putting hundreds of union members in the trades to work. And this is part of the AFL-CIO Building Investment Trust, which is absolutely magnificent. It's been around for many, many years, and they have built projects or rehabbed old buildings primarily to help out low-income people. There's a lot of these apartments, and with the housing market the way it is, you can't even afford a lot of the places anymore. Not when the AFL-CIO gets in there. And they're using all their pension money to make these projects happen. So Fred will touch on that as well. We'll talk about the voting in Virginia and also infrastructure. Jeez. I hope. Now they're saying maybe by Thanksgiving. We'll see. We'll see. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration issued a federal rule, this was yesterday, mandating COVID-19 vaccinations or at least weekly testing for workers at U.S. companies with 100 or more employees. You knew this was coming. They talked about this months ago. It finally happened yesterday. And it turns out that 80% of all adults have received at least one dose of the vaccine, which is okay, I guess. The new guideline will cover 84 million workers who will be required to be fully vaccinated or undergo weekly testing. Businesses will face fines of $13,653 for each minor violation of rules meant to boost the vaccine, and as much as $136,532. I don't know where they get these figures from, but that's what they are, if the violation is deemed willful. So if they say, well, you know what, you're not going to get the vaccine, well, then they'll get that big fine. Companies must ensure that their workers are either fully vaccinated against COVID-19 by the 4th of January or that they test negative at least once a week. So every week, if you're not vaccinated, you got to be tested. Under the OSHA rule, employers must grant paid time off for workers who choose to get vaccinated and provide sick leave for workers to recover from any side effects. Unvaccinated workers must also wear face coverings while on the job. This is all coming from Washington. This is the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Now, we're getting a little bit of pushback here from the leaders of National COSH. That's the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health. They announced yesterday that the new emergency temporary standard, that's what it is, issued by OSHA, can increase vaccination rates, but they said it is a mistake to push the cost of testing and masks onto workers. Valid point. National COSH supports science-based standards to protect workers from the deadly COVID-19 pandemic, said Jessica Martinez, co-executive director of National COSH. Based on evidence from employers where a vaccine requirement is already in effect, this new standard can increase vaccination rates among more than 80 million U.S. private sector workers. She went on to say, we're glad to see the standard includes paid time off for workers to get a vaccine and recover from any side effects, but it's unfortunate that this new rule does not require employers to pay for face masks or for the cost of testing for workers who choose not to get vaccinated. Now, I'll be honest, there's a lot of employers that do provide face masks, but they want it mandated, apparently. So that's what National COSH is saying. Members of the Scranton Federation of Teachers, that's Scranton, Pennsylvania, they're part of AFT Local 1147, went on strike Wednesday morning as teachers and school support staff are leaving. Positions and services are being cut, and students are being denied resources, all while the district drags its feet on a fair contract. The union said a fair contract is long overdue, and its members have gone on strike to fight for their students as well as their community. Come in here from Rosemary Boland. She's the president of the local. That's Local 1147. See us on the picket lines. Scranton educators, parents, and students have sacrificed, and we are tired of holding the bag for district mismanagement. It's bad for teachers. It's bad for kids, she said. Scranton's public schools are in crisis. And instead of fixing it fairly using the new available funds from the federal rescue and recovery packages, the district and the state-appointed financial manager just want teachers to keep sacrificing. That's out of Scranton, Pennsylvania. You know, we talked the other day about John Deere workers. They rejected a second offered deal. And just to recap that, the first deal provided a 5% increase in the first year. They said it wasn't enough, so they boosted it to 10%. And they said if they would sign the second offer, they'd get a bonus, a signing bonus of $8,500. Now, that still wasn't enough. They got more union brothers and sisters to vote on it, but it wasn't enough. So they're still on strike. And this has prompted a comment from a historian at the University of Chicago. Gabriel Winant noted 35 years ago, workers at John Deere lost a lockout and took a deal that froze and reduced wages. Now they have rejected an offer that starts with a 10% raise. It's the biggest downward shift in the economic balance of power in my lifetime. That's pretty significant. So what's happening now in America with all these strikes? Workers are saying, you know what? We got screwed, not just recently, but we're going back years. And think about this, especially with all these trade deals and jobs lost to Mexico, then to China, then to Vietnam, then to India. They're saying, you know what? This is our moment. And that's what's happening. In the meantime, a national survey by the organization More Perfect Union. This is a collection of journalists, and they're pretty aggressive. But the survey found that 58% of Americans view labor unions favorably. Though a majority of every income level indicated support for unions, the strongest backing came from low-income workers and those with only a high school education. More Perfect Union notes that the same voters the Democrats have been struggling to win over and energize in recent elections are among the strongest supporters of unions. And the Democratic Party, they noted, is desperate to win the votes of these non-college educated white working class voters, a group that went for Donald Trump by 15 percentage points in the 2020 presidential election. And More Perfect Union's latest poll, coupled with the strikes I just talked about, apparently indicate that these voters are becoming increasingly committed to a militant labor movement. Sounds like what's happening at John Deere, don't you think? The article points out that President Biden and other prominent Democratic lawmakers have been reluctant to even express support for the thousands of workers currently on strike around the country. As More Perfect Union concludes, if Democrats want to protect and expand their majorities next year, having prominent elected officials speak out in support of workers fighting for better wages and dignity in the workplace could be a good place to start. They say abolishing the filibuster and passing the PRO Act might be an even better place to start. Amen to that. You know, there are members of Biden's cabinet speaking out. Marty Walsh for one of them, and he's taken some heat. Education and Labor Committee Republican leader Virginia Fox, I talked about her on the show. Well, she has gotten a couple of her conservative friends in Congress to get together, and they're demanding answers from Marty Walsh on his participation in the strike activity with the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and Grain Millers International Union against Kellogg. This happened on October 27th. And the group said the Department of Labor should be working with both the employer and the union to ensure that a fair agreement is reached. So the letter says a couple of things. Will you commit to recuse yourself from all enforcement actions undertaken by the Department of Labor related to Kellogg, the company subject to the strike? Will you commit to recuse yourself from all enforcement actions undertaken by the Labor Department related to the union? Did you seek ethics advice prior to this visit? Provide any guidance or advice you received on the legality of this visit and your ethical obligations related to the visit? And did you do this on your own time? So that's the message from the conservative members of Congress on Marty Walsh. It'll be interesting to see how he answers this one. All right, we have to take a quick break. Dorsey Hager of the Columbus Building Trades coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Before we get to Dorsey Hager, I just want to mention what Liz Shuler, president of the Labor Federation, said about what happened at the polls on Tuesday. She said the following: "We are grateful to the thousands of union volunteers who made phone calls, knocked on doors, and worked hard for labor-endorsed candidates across the country. While the results aren't what we hope for across the board, our labor program was out in force spreading the word about the issues that are most important to working people. So in the coming days and weeks, we will learn more about what exactly motivated workers in this election. But this year is clear. 2021 was a reaction. Working people are fed up with struggling to get by, working harder for less, and paying more for just about everything. So it's time for our elected leaders to deliver the bold investments we voted for in 2020. That's the comment from Liz Shuler, president of the AFL-CIO. Let's go to line number one. You can hear him in the background, Mr. Dorsey Hager, who heads the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. ColumbusConstruction.org is their website. Dorsey, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
Doing great. Friday, getting ready to head into a big football weekend. Browns, Bengals, Buckeyes, Cornhuskers. So doing what I can to put an end to this week and head into that weekend.
Yeah, I'm hoping for good results with the Browns, but I'll tell you, it's been a rough week, especially with that Pittsburgh loss. Oh my gosh!
Oh. Been a very rough week, but I'm looking forward to the Battle of Ohio Sunday, and hopefully the guys can kind of straighten out the locker room drama a little bit, come together, and put on a good performance, because that's going to be a heavy lift on Sunday in Cincinnati.
Yeah. Boy, Cincinnati has really come back strong. My gosh, that quarterback is amazing, really amazing. All right. Hey, you heard the statement from Liz Shuler on the elections, and I will say one thing. They lost in Virginia, and that was a squeaker in New Jersey. Nobody expected that to be that close, but I will say this. If it wasn't for the unions in New Jersey, that would not have happened, because Phil Murphy is a very union-friendly guy. In fact, he's got just about every union behind him, and I know that pushed him over. So hats off to what the unions did in the state of New Jersey. They've got a really good program there getting union brothers and sisters involved in politics. So I'm sure that played heavy into that as well. But let's check in with you. What's your take on what happened on Tuesday? And maybe you could hone this into Central Ohio.
Yeah. So my take is this. We knew that turnout was going to be low. We knew that people weren't going to be all that excited to vote. You know, there was a lot of crazy stuff with vaccine mandates, a lot of crazy stuff with masks, a lot of crazy stuff with critical race theory. So I think I saw an article that school board races were so heavily involved. There was a lot of money spent. You know, here in a suburb of Columbus, there was a heavily contested school board race in a suburb called Dublin, where you had, I think, seven candidates vying for three seats, which is unheard of. Usually you have three vie for three or four vie for three. And three of the candidates, even went out and got individual donations from somebody of $10,000. So you think of somebody giving a school board candidate $10,000, they were pretty heavily invested in that race.
Oh,
my
yeah.
school district that I live in, Fairbanks, outside of Marysville, rural Ohio, I mean, it's hard for us to recruit people to run for school board. And then this year we actually had a decision to make. We had four people running for three. So I think a lot of people were caught up in a lot of that. I think a lot of that came from messaging from the national level, and also how much the pandemic has been politicized and is still being politicized. But my take on New Jersey is, I think you're absolutely right. I think unions, union members, I think not only our money and our contributions, but our foot soldiers on the ground, our door knocking, our getting our members involved can really help. I don't want to say swing an election, but maybe impact an election. And I think we had a lot to do with Governor Murphy getting reelected. And I think I saw a stat, he's the first Democrat to be reelected in New Jersey in over 40 years. So that's good. I wasn't as optimistic as my union friends in Virginia. I know that immediate polling right now is showing that women, and specifically women in the suburbs that left Trump in 20 and went to Biden, have been unhappy with Biden. His approval ratings were incredibly low in the exit polling. So a lot of the women in the suburbs, you know, like I said, that left Trump and voted for Trump in 16, voted for Biden in 20, 21, felt like maybe he wasn't doing enough.
Uh-huh.
And they voted for the Republican on the ticket. That's what the polling showed. What I think is going to be interesting, and I hope that NAB too, or I hope that the national AFL-CIO does this, I want to see what union members, especially union members in rural areas, did. Because I know I had this conversation, you know, in 2018, when they flipped the state house in Virginia and the Senate, which it also looks like the state house in Virginia is going to go back Republican. But when they flipped the state house, you know, a heavy item that polled well with union members was right to work, because a lot of Democrats and a lot of pro-labor Democrats in the rural areas that were winning historically red seats campaigned on right to work. You know, Virginia's a right to work state, and they said that if elected, they were going to do everything they could to make sure that Virginia was no longer a right to work state. So a lot of these new Democrats, a lot of these new got elected in the House and in the Senate, they introduced a bill, passed a bill to ban right to work in Virginia, and then the Democratic governor wouldn't sign it because he wanted to keep Virginia historically a right to work state. And that was a Democrat, and that was somebody that was endorsed and supported by unions. So, you know, I think I had this conversation early Wednesday morning with one of my members, an in-person conversation. He said, it's just so frustrating. He's like, you know, pro-labor candidates get elected, they make a few gains, and then the other side, you know, fights back, they get elected, they take back some of those gains, and we don't get ahead anywhere. It's just give and take. And it's very simply put with what you're seeing in the infrastructure bill. You know, would I like to see pre-K? Would I like to see paid family leave? You know, would I like to see some of the more interesting conversations, you know, about community college and stuff like that? Absolutely. But it's just like when we bargain our union contracts. When you bargain from a position of strength, there's a lot more you can do and a lot more you can get for your members. The Democrats in D.C., especially with Manchin and Sinema kind of whacking them off at the knees, they're not bargaining from a position of strength. So while you may have a wish list, you know, you've got to have a reality list too. And I think that 2 months ago, when it looked like the best deal that they had negotiated, you know, and again, it didn't include some of the things that the president had campaigned on, which stunk. I think they should have went with that part of the infrastructure bill, chalked that up as a narrow victory, and moved on, because we're just stuck in this stalemate right now. And, you know, we have tons of issues that are still going on that the president campaigned on that he promised to address, which I get. You know, we have issues with the Senate, with our own members, and we have issues in the House right now. But I mean, there's supply chain issues that are affecting every industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's issues, you know, not only at the border, but there's also issues with immigration reform. You know, we've have people that have been living here for generations and working their families for generations that are still undocumented, want to come out of the shadows, want to become citizens, want to join unions, want to do better for themselves and their families. But, you know, they're caught up in the bureaucracy, and that's not happening. You know, we're having issues with unemployment compensation throughout the states. We're having all these issues that need to be addressed. And right now we're stuck on something so simple as infrastructure. And this is my opinion. This isn't the opinion of the Columbus Building Trades. This is my personal opinion. But if we can do something to put more people to work, to invest in our infrastructure, even if it's the basic infrastructure principles, roads, bridges, research facilities, you know, factories so we can manufacture stuff here so it's not sitting on a cargo ship somewhere off the coast of California, then we need to do that, chalk that up as a victory, and move on. You know, you're not going to get everything you want all the time, and you're especially not going to get everything you want when you're not bargaining from a position of power, you know. So that was probably a long-winded answer to your question about elections. But here locally, the Democrats here in Columbus and Franklin County had a great night. They historically have a great night, municipal elections. A lot of our endorsed candidates, a lot of friends of ours from labor got either elected or reelected. City council was huge. President Shannon Hardin carried the ticket, got reelected. Got his two teammates elected with him, and they worked their butts off too. Nick Bankston, who's been a friend of mine since 2015, when he went to work for then newly elected Mayor Andrew Ginther, he got elected for his first time in city council. And then a Latino, Lourdes de Barrosa de Padilla, was elected. It's the first Latin member of a Hispanic member to be elected to Columbus City Council. So I think she's going to do a great job, as our Hispanic population and our immigrant population continues to grow here in Columbus. I think she's going to be a great voice for those people and of the city that you know, that she represents. Our city attorney, a good friend of mine, I've known him since his freshman year of college, Zach Klein, was reelected. He ran unopposed. He's doing a tremendous job. I spent the evening with him on election night. Our city auditor, Megan Kilgore, who's kept us in the black these last 5 years that she's been in office, and specifically through the pandemic, she got reelected, so that was great. We got a new school board member, Christina Vera, which is going to be interesting. I know she campaigned really well. She screened really well with us. Ramona Reyes was reelected to the school board, as was Michael Cole. And then the judicial races, which I know you and I talk about all the time, that are so important. Jim O'Grady, who's been endorsed by us in the past, was reelected. Eileen Paley was reelected. Mark Hummer was reelected. Cindy Ebner, a good friend of mine, was reelected. And then two Republicans that we endorse, pretty good pro-labor Republicans that sit on the bench, Stephanie Mingo and Gina Russo, were reelected. So it was an interesting night here locally, an interesting night nationally. I know people at the election returns, a couple of the parties that I were at, were obviously focused on Virginia. We're interested in some of the polling numbers and things coming out. We're disappointed, but locally it was a pretty good night.
Well, Dorsey, you hit all cylinders there. You got the national, you got the local, you got your opinion in there. And if you don't mind, I just want to add to that about the infrastructure. I had a conversation with Bill Samuel, the government affairs director of the Labor Federation. This was months ago, and we talked about the infrastructure bill, the bipartisan bill, and reconciliation. And I said to him, you know, it probably would be a good idea to take what you have right now, get that passed, and then maybe work on the reconciliation package. At least you got a win there. And he said, well, I understand that, but it's better to put it all in one and go big. And I get that part too. But, you know, sometimes you got to do one step at a time, don't you think? Especially, and that would have, Biden would have had a win on under his belt there. Don't you think that might have been the right way to proceed on this?
I do think it would have been the right way. And then as he's going around and he's campaigning to help some of these people get elected, especially McAuliffe in Virginia, I think it gives him more clout. And, you know, Van Jones said this in his interview on CNN the other night, and he talked about this. He's like, you know, the Democrats have to do something to string a couple of victories here. You know, to use a sports analogy, if you have a struggling sports team or a struggling football team, you know, you might go out and win a game ugly 13-9. But you're not apologetic about it because you won and you've turned the tables, and that creates momentum. And then maybe one win turns into two wins turns into three wins. You know what I mean? And that's what they need to do. And they need to do it fast because, you know, we're a year out from the presidential election now. We're less than a year away from the midterms. And then we're going to be halfway into the president's term. And it's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens. You know, and with the filibuster and everything else and the Senate, I mean, I don't know. I think it's going to be very difficult for Democrats in 2022 to keep control of the Senate. So things are only going to get tougher. And unfortunately, that seems like the playbook in D.C. now is when the other party is in power, block everything. Mm-hmm. And that's what's going on, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And boy, does that frustrate voters. Oh, my gosh. Nothing getting done. Oh, my God.
And that's why it drives out turnout. I mean, in the city of Columbus and in Franklin County, I was looking at the turnout, and I think they anticipated 18% turnout, and turnout was 24.8%. Now, it was spurred by a crazy issue that we're not even going to discuss because I don't want to give it any merit, where an outside dark money group was trying to take money out of the city budget, I think $87 million a year, and use it for what they termed clean energy, which that was not the case at all. It was just a scam, as the mayor said, and the voters were educated, and we educated the voters and our members, and that was overturned 87-13, issue 7. So that drove up turnout in Columbus and Franklin County. But, you know, off-year elections, and especially off-year elections, municipal elections, you know, the turnout was down. How was turnout in the city of Cleveland with the Justin Bibb and the Kevin Kelly race? I know there was a lot of eyes on that race throughout the state and also throughout the Midwest. Was turnout high in Cleveland?
It was a little bit higher. They had a pretty good absentee vote, and overall they were projecting around 30%. I think it came about 26%. But still, if it's 26%, that means 74% of the people didn't vote, and they're registered to vote. That's the sad part.
Yeah. So, three out of the four people you walk by on the street aren't taking part in the electoral process.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah.
And then a young man, we forgot about this, a young man that's been on your show, incredibly talented, incredibly smart, Aftab Pureball, was elected his first term mayor of Cincinnati.
I saw that. That's great. I'll tell you.
39 years old. Very.
I know. I know. I got to get him back on the show. Yeah, he was a gem. He revolutionized the clerk of courts office down there. Great guy. Oh. That was a good one. All right, Dorsey, I got to take a quick break here. Dorsey Hager joining us, as he does each and every month, right here on America's Workforce. Dorsey heads the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Fred Redman, the number two man in the AFL-CIO. He'll be joining us later in the show.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, we're available on 6 platforms now. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, Stitcher is another one. We just added that a couple of weeks ago. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always like those 5-star ratings. Let's go back to our live line with Dorsey Hager. On behalf of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, you can follow them on Twitter at BuildCentralOH. All right, every time I talk to you, you're bringing up something that's going up in Columbus, another building, and the trades are happy about that. We need more in the trades. We always talk about that as well. What's this Amgen groundbreaking? Talk to me about it. What's going on
there?
What
a good day. What a good day. We were talking about Friday and getting to the football weekend. Well, I'm going to cap off my Friday going out and spending some time with the Lieutenant Governor, John Husted. My friends at One Columbus, Kenny McDonald, Jeff Polasowski, who do a lot of development there and bring a lot of business here to Columbus and Central Ohio, also some of my brothers and sisters here in the Columbus building trades, and also the folks from Amgen, which is a large pharmaceutical company from California. They're looking at building production plants and support buildings throughout the country. They've chosen New Albany, which is a suburb of Columbus. They're going to be building out there. The groundbreaking's this afternoon. Huge project. I mean, it's being reported in the papers is right around $225, $300 million. We're hearing that the total project could be upwards of $800 million. It's a little bit secretive right now because it's all so new. It was just announced a few weeks ago, and like I said, they're breaking ground today. So it's going to be really, really interesting. Obviously, Governor DeWine was invited to take part in the groundbreaking, was going to spearhead that today. He was huge and instrumental, and his development team, you know, bringing business here to Ohio. But he's quarantined right now. Him and his wife were exposed to two staffers who had COVID. So, you know, our thoughts and prayers with them, hopefully for, you know, they remain healthy and safe and everything. But we're going to miss him out there. But it's going to be great. I can't wait to get out there, hearing a lot of good information from my guys. We're driving a lot of contractor participation out there. It looks like it's going to be a good project. It's going to be another place for us to continue to place people out of our pre-apprenticeship program, Building Futures, but also keep our members working and grow our membership, obviously. Rodney French, business manager from the Sheet Metal Workers, and I met with Jeff and Kenny a couple nights ago talking about economic development, what we could do to be helpful. You know, we discussed a lot about workforce development, and Kenny made the statement to us, obviously he can't, you know, comment on some of these projects because they're you know, our NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, which we totally understand. But he was saying, you know, are you guys going to be at the groundbreaking at Amgen? We said, absolutely, we will. And he says, well, he says, I'm working on three projects right now. He's like, I'm not going to tell you I'm going to get all three. He's like, but I could. And he's like, I know I'm probably at least going to get one. He's like, but we should have announcements by the end of the year. And all three of these projects are very, very similar, if not larger in size and scope than Amgen. So it's exciting times here as we keep building data centers. We keep bringing, you know, things here. We keep reinvesting in our own community, you know, as we see expansions, you know, around the city and around the county and around our Central Ohio market, you know, especially at Ohio State, Amazon, Facebook, Google. So a lot of opportunity, a lot of opportunity. Right now we're on pace to break our record from last year for man hours worked, and next year looks even better than 2021. So I'm really excited.
I'm just wondering, is this translating to the schools as far as apprenticeship programs? I mean, they've got to see all these buildings going up and realize that they could be making a whole lot of dough if they get involved in the trades. Is that happening down there, Dorsey?
Yeah, it's really starting to happen. So, you know, I graduated from Hilliard High School, and the Hilliard City Schools about 6 months ago met with me and a couple of our training directors, and they wanted to do an outreach event out there that we did last Thursday. And Hilliard has four high schools. They have Darby, Bradley, and Davidson. Then they have a vocational school, which is Tolles Technical. So their curriculum director and their superintendent out there said, you know, we're going to have this event. It's going to be 9 to 2. Get as many of your trades here to do hands-on demonstrations. We'll have about 3,000 kids at this event. You know, and I didn't say anything. I'm like, yeah, 3,000? I don't think so. You might have 300, but I don't think we'll have 3,000. So, you know, we had a lot of the trades out there, you know, the kids were able to do stuff with plumbing. They were able to bend some conduit. They were able to pour some concrete. They were able to build and bend sheet metal and build their own toolboxes. You know, they got to talk to us about all the trades. They got to talk to us about building futures, about driving futures, all the opportunities in the Teamsters, all the opportunities, you know, in all the trades. The operating engineers had a lot of heavy equipment there that they were letting kids get on and you know, operate safely and under instruction, obviously. But when you get a bunch of those kids in an atmosphere like that, and you give them some information they can take home, and you give them access to your website, your social media, so they can do some research on their phone or on their laptop or iPad on themselves, and then you give them, you know, they talk to somebody and they understand the wages that can be made, the benefits that can be made, the security that can be made, the long-range outlook, and then right there in the center of their school district, one of the largest data centers in Central Ohio, Amazon, is being built, so they can actually see a project that they could potentially work on when they graduate. I think it brings it all home, and we did. Hilliard stepped up, and they did what they said they were going to do, and we had 3,000 kids there over the five-hour span of this outreach event. I mean, it was just overwhelming. I mean, you know me, and you can tell from this radio interview, I love to talk to people, and I can do it all day long, and I think I'm I'm halfway decent at it, but boy, after a couple hours, I had to take a break. I was just swamped and swarmed and overwhelmed, and we were just, you know, switching in and out. Josh Kincaid from the Teamsters, Leland Bass, you know, our partner at the Urban League for Building Futures, Kelly Harrop, our outreach director, Mitchell Thompson, Derek Foster from the Urban League. We just, it was amazing how many kids we talked to and how interested they were in the trades, the opportunities, the different jobs available in the industry. And then, you know, kids aren't dumb, especially kids today. They want to know, you know, if I graduate from the IBW training program, how much money am I going to make in a year? If I became a union plumber, how much money am I going to make in a year? What am I going to start off at? What's my health care benefits going to be? What about pension and retirement? I don't want to be doing this when I'm 70. You know, so it was very interesting. Great conversations.
That's great. 3,000 kids. You had to eat your words on that one, huh?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like I said, just the word I kept using, and I used it in one of our meetings the other day, was overwhelming. Just a ton of participation.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Good to hear. All right. We're going to leave it on that note. Dorsey Hager, Executive Director of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, proud sponsor of America's Workforce. Website, columbusconstruction.org. You could follow them on Twitter at BuildCentralOH. You take care, my brother. Talk to you in December, all right?
Will do. Thank you. Let's root for the Buckeyes and let's root for the Browns. We got to turn the corner. We can't get under 500. And I cannot believe I'm saying this. This Bengal game is crucial, and we got to keep them in reach as they're atop the AFC North in front of us. So.
I hear you, Dorsey. Take care. I got to run here. Dorsey Hager on our live line. All right, Fred Redmond, on behalf of the AFL-CIO, he's Secretary Treasurer. He's coming up next. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, Twitter handle. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation, all connected to the AFL-CIO. Speaking of which, let's go to line number two. And welcome back to the show, Mr. Fred Redmond. Fred, steelworker since 1973, and about 2 months ago, was named Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, and he's working two jobs now. Hey, you know what? You're not getting any younger. Fred, how are you doing?
I know. Welcome. Tell me.
Well, what's going? You're still doing some negotiations for the steel industry? What's the story?
Yeah, thanks, Flash. Happy to be with you. Yeah, I'm in Newport News, Virginia. Our largest local union is Local 8888, which represent workers at Huntington Ingalls Shipyard. And steel workers, we build the largest, the best aircraft carriers in the Navy's fleet. I mean, you know, our members really built all of the ship, all of the aircraft carriers for the Navy here at Huntington Ingalls. We have about 10,000 members that work in the shipyard.
Sounds like the talks are kind of difficult right now, huh?
Yeah, they're always difficult, Crash. Stuff don't get any easier, you know. The contract expires on the 14th of November, next Sunday. And, you know, we're plugging away. We're working hard. Our committee is doing a fantastic job, you know, in terms of really bringing to the table and our green issues on behalf of our members. So, you know, hopefully we'll get there. But, no, the issues are tough. You know, this is a time when, you know, workers are really feeling disgusted over the situation they find themselves in. And workers are really speaking out. And we can see that by the actions that's taking place around the country.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, here in Newport News, you know, our workers are speaking out very forcefully, and hopefully we can get to a contract.
I see you were out in Southern California, I believe it was last week, and this is Kaiser Permanente. This is a crazy situation. I guess this has been going on for years. They pay different rates to workers doing the exact same job? How are they getting away with that?
Yeah, Kaiser Permanente, it's a strange situation for the fact that we've enjoyed a partnership with Kaiser going back to 1987. You know, we work together. We do things by consensus. The company have always modeled our partnership as the way to really have good labor management relations. And, you know, we've had a cooperative partnership with Kaiser through the years. And our alliance is a coalition of 10 different unions and nurses associations. We bargain together with Kaiser. And in this bargaining, Kaiser have taken a position that they're no longer interested in operating under that partnership model. So one of the issues is that we represented, when I say we, I'm talking about the Steelworkers Union. We have 7,400 workers in our local 7,600. And a large segment of those workers are hospital service workers. These are workers that work in the cafeterias, the orderlies, you know, and we represent these workers, the steel workers, in what's known as the Inland Empire, which is Long Beach, Compton, Watts, and the majority of our membership happen to be African American and Latino. And, you know, unfortunately, our members, which is majority black and Latino, that work in the service departments in these hospitals, are being paid up to $2 less an hour than other kinds of workers that's working in areas outside of predominantly underserved and low-income communities.
And they've been getting away with that.
They've been getting away with it, and, you know, it have came to light these negotiations, and it's one of the issues that we're addressing. And the other issues are, you know, Kaiser want to divide the workers by putting in a two-tier wage system, and then they actually offer in next to nothing in terms of pay raises under the premise that our folks make too much money, if you can believe that.
Jeez. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, like you said, you had a good relationship with them, but it sounds like they got new people in management there that are not
what you call
worker-friendly and union-friendly. All right, let's switch gears here a little bit. We had some elections around the country this past week. We had a squeaker in New Jersey. We're not expecting that, and I know the unions were pretty active there. Didn't work out in Virginia. Any thoughts of what happened at the polls here, Fred?
Well, you know, here in Virginia, I've been here for a couple of weeks, and I've did some precinct walks. I've been out at some plant gates. I spent some time while I was here working on the election. And, you know, Crash, when you're living in an environment like, you know, down here in Virginia, when gas prices are the highest that they've been in the last 5 years, And then you have workers who feel as though they're not getting the wages that they deserve, even though a year ago they was considered essential. And really, they don't see anything happening. You know, they don't see their lives improving. They don't see anything that's taking place that benefits them and their families, okay? And yeah. I think that people throughout this state, particularly workers, had enough. And, you know, it was a close election, and I think the closeness of the election, you know, was based on the fact that organized labor really, really got behind the Democratic candidate, Terry McAuliffe, who we felt and we know is the best candidate for working people. But, you know, we understand process. You know, Crash, I understand process. You understand process. We talk to the Democrats. You know, we got to get something going. You know, people want to see this administration working for them. They hung up mm-hmm. in this process. And people don't understand process. People want to see results. And what happened in Virginia was people did not see the results. They did not see any benefits from this administration that they voted from, they voted for. They didn't see the, you know, any benefits coming down to them, and they rebelled. And then the statement that McAuliffe made about schools and parents don't, you know, have a say so. Mm-hmm. And he said he was quoted out of context, and you know, I understand that because I know Terry McAuliffe. But, you know, when you got somebody live on film saying that parents don't have any say-so, and I'm paraphrasing, you know, in terms of, you know, school curriculum, then, you know, I mean, it was just a bridge too far.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we lost.
One more question here. We just got to wrap it up. Do you think the fact that we have no consensus yet on the infrastructure and the Build Back Better idea that Biden's pushing, do you think that that played into what happened at the polls this week?
I think that was a very significant part of what happened in the polls this week. You know, as I stated, you know, people want to see some benefits that from the votes that they made. I mean, Biden won this state by 10 percentage points, you know. And people want to see this administration, this government working for them, and they're just not seeing it. And I think that the Build Back Better bill, the infrastructure bill, could have probably turned things around in Virginia, and I don't think New Jersey would have been as close if we could have got through this messy process and got those two bills passed before the election.
We just got to get these Democrats to work together, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We'll see what happens. I understand that the House is going to put both bills forward today within the House. And they put back in, you know, some items that was originally dropped from the bill, like the, you know, child care. I mean, I'm sorry, the paid personal leave bill, you know. But, you know, it still has to go through the Senate.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see what happens. But I just hope that the moderates and the, you know, liberals and the, you know, look, we're all Democrats, and I just hope that somehow we can find a path forward and get the work done so that we can move the country forward.
Get the work done. That's the takeaway. You got it, my friend. Fred Redmond, this is our first Friday with Fred. Fred Redmond, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, the operating engineers and the postal mail handlers. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.